Hello all. You are tuning in to the Audible We Walk podcast, episode number 74. This is Nina welcoming you. Like last week, this week too, I will give you clues about a food terribly ignored but present around us. And I'm sure you have seen them. They are pretty ubiquitous. So let me tell you my story. Mixed with that will be your clues. So listen on and see if you can arrive at the answer. Actually, even if your response takes you to another wild, weedy and wonderful, do not worry. The ultimate aim of this edible weed coloring book, this audible weed podcast, and the actual edible weed walk that is held on Saturday mornings is to bring our attention to our peripheries of our lives. Where this wonderful wild greens waits with all their nutritional values, macronutrients, and just being there, giving us a sense of well-being. What is better known as Shinrin Yoku, or the forest bathing. In this case, nature bathing. Try it. Even if you cannot join the weed walk I offer, try walking slow-paced, noticing every details of plants, butterflies, bees, and bird calls around you. You do not need to know the names of the plants. Just acknowledge their presence like you would nod or smile at a friendly stranger you pass by on your way. That experience is precious, and anything else, whether the weed is edible or not, medicinal or not, all that are added bonus. If you are listening to this audible weed walk, try closing your eyes and listening and noticing which plant my clues lead you to. In a way, it is your virtual Shinrin Yoku. Here the story begins. Years ago, somewhere near Masinaguri, which is near Bandipur Tiger Reserve, as a part of our fieldwork, me and my classmates in ecology were taking a long hike. The hike, as I remember it, was longer than we thought. It was hot, sunny, and we were parched. Parched enough that the water that we carried in our water bottle wouldn't have quenched our thirst. It was not too bad, but, you know, we were getting there. The tribal guide who was leading us stopped, and so did we. Among scrubs and weeds, and yes, that's how I looked at it, you know, by the at that time. To my amazement, he picked up what looked like a bulged base of a flower, sometimes with old remnants of the flower still sticking on it. He collected a few, it kind of looked reddish, and carefully cut open to the inner, amazingly juicy and brightly red pulp. We all had one, I think. Maybe the novelty of it, or the juicy innard, or the attractive color, all had contributed to our utmost satisfaction. It perked us all up. And the red color lingered on. It was on our tongue, on our lips, and we were wondering about it. Back in our camp, we figured out the name. We figured out the family name of the plant. And I remember I had long tales to tell about it when I returned to Pondicherry. My aunt used to live there, and she and her friend in the ashram listened in awe about this wild fruit I ate, which we did not know about. Fast forward several years hence, this time I was a graduate student in the USA. My pretty cramped doctoral student office room had 4 cubicles and no windows. Don't be surprised, it's not at all unusual. One desk was empty, and in a few days, a new graduate student was assigned there. Juan Carlos Guzman Aranda. He was from Mexico. We had one huge thing in common. We were both tropical people. We complained most about the cold and the ice, and we liked each other's food. Juan bought mate tea in his own mate pot, and so that we could have. So we were always curious about what the other brought for potlucks when we had one. Then one time, one brought something that was made into a simple stir-fry veggie. The green was kind of cut up like French fries and were crunchy, somewhat like despite the cooking, it remained kind of crunchy and pulpy. Something like when you steam the beans, but don't make it too limpy. It still has its crunch. Curious, I asked him, and he told me a name that took me back to our hike in the Masinagudi several years back. He was saying the same name. How could it be? So, did we eat the fruit? What my friend is now offering is a cook stem. Do we eat that in India? Why not? The fruit was offered to us by a tribal guy, so it is part of tribal food, which means the plant has been in Indian ecosystem for a while. But then, there was no mention of eating the greens. I started reading about it a bit, about the strikingly juicy and red fruit and the green veggie that I had recently had. The plant is clearly from Central and South America. So at some point, long, long ago, it may, like many other plants, made it to India. Otherwise, how can it get a tribal into the in tribal culture also? Of course, in more recent years, looking into the weeds, I know that it is a common story. Plants originate in one place or simultaneously in different parts of the world, find their place in different lands where, if they get naturalized early enough, they get a new name and ways of using it for medicine, for food, for other needs. But my theory is that the range of use the plant has in its original habitat is always more. Turns out the red color of that fruit that I had before had stories to tell. A tiny insect, cochineal, reared on the plant is the source of the striking and lasting red dye from the Aztec time to the present. It is used in food, clothing, cosmetics, and even painting masterpieces. So our red tongues and the lips were painted with the ancient dye created by an insect. Isn't that story fascinating? It made me love the fruit all over again. And in the USA, in the Mexican and international grocery store, I could find them fairly easily. The greens too. Now I saw, but wasn't sure how to go about it. You see, this was pre-Google and YouTube days, and hence the idea of simply checking out a recipe did not strike. But then I had a Mexican office mate, right? So there were cooking sessions, getting the greens, cutting up, cooking simply like I would, simple stir fry, just needed to cover and cook it for a little longer than usual with onion and tomatoes. I would have preferred some green chilies also, but my friend didn't want that. Instead, he put a mix of chili and herb as spices that really perked up the dish and gave it a wonderful aroma. Later, I learned to make huaraches. The word huaraches means sandals, like footwear. But in food, it refers to a sandal-shaped base, which is topped with tomatoes, lettuce, cheese, guacamole, something like, you would top a burrito with. You can add, instead of, meat, you can add paneer, maybe, green jackfruit instead, and make it absolute sumptuous open burger kind of food. There are many species and many varieties of this plant. Comparatively, we have only a handful of them in India. Some are tastier than the others, but some cultivars are grown more for the fruits and rather than the veggies. Veggies are not at all popular in India. I mean, we don't hear about it at all. But we often use them this plant as our in our garden as a garden plant. Or to fence it as a fence plant. So now I pause. Any guesses? Well, I'm going to give you the name anyway, but guess if you like. Some of you must have guessed it already. Yes, it is Opuntia or the prickly pear. In Tamil, it is locally called Sapatikalli. Nagfana in Hindi and Bengali. Vajrakantaka in Sanskrit. It belongs to the family Cactaceae. This family Cactaceae doesn't naturally exist in India. The Opuntia has a Sanskrit name, perhaps indicating the long presence it has in India. It originates from the Americas and now it is presently cultivated in some parts of India and also globally. There are several varieties of Opuntia found in India. In this podcast, what I refer to as greens are actually Opuntia paddles, which are actually the modified stem of the plant that looks like thick leaves. And the leaves are modified into thorns. So these paddles are called nopal, and the plural is nopales in Mexico. I clarified that the Opuntia that we find in India have all edible nopales. But of course, some varieties may be tastier than the others. Opuntia delaney, which is in my book also, occurs wildly in many parts of India, and recently Indian agricultural department is encouraging farming of a cultivar called Opuntia ficus indica. It has nothing to do with India or our ficus. It's just a name which probably because of the fruit looks like ficus fruits. This variety is cultivated more for the fruits. So edible parts are nopale and the fruits. Both can be eaten raw or cooked, but not before getting rid of the thorns. Not just the large thorns, there are tiny little, finer thorns which are actually a greater menace. So the best way to actually handle it is to hold either the nopale or the fruit with a tong and lightly hold it over fire. So all the tiny little thorns, they just burn away. And then it is easy to, if there are large thorns, it is easy to get them out also. So both can be, once it is done, it's actually not roasting or cooking, just getting rid of the thorns, which is only on the surface. Both the nopale and the fruit can be eaten raw or cooked. So when it is cooking, it can be, sauteed as I had experienced first, or grilled or processed. What processing can be done? This includes dehydrating and making a powder of the fruit pulp. And, it remains as a bright red color and adds to both the taste and the color in foods that is added. Lots used in baking and in some kind of sweet dishes. Then flour from the paddles or the nopales. Pickles, jams, squash, candied products are all made with the fruits and the nopales. Of course, there are plenty of benefits. It is known to be excellent for gut health, anti-inflammatory, antioxidant, anti-diabetic, antidepressant, and heals liver and many others. So next time you see an ordinary, dusty, ignored prickly pear plant on the side of the road, remember the potential it holds with a little bit of nurturing and care. With that thought, I will end this week. See you next week. Until then, stay well and stay safe. And don't forget to try out some of these awesome food.
This is Auroville Radio, voices from the city of Dome.